For more information on ancient dragon Zengate and Taigen's teachings, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please click on the link for Just Give on our website.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome.
Good morning.
So, this week I've been speaking about Zazen in terms of some of Dogen's teachings. Many of his teachings inspired by the Lotus Sutra, one of the great Bodhisattva Mahayana texts, probably the most important scripture in East Asia, and Dogen talks about it a lot. So this has to do, well, there's so much to say, but this has to do but with the background of this Zen practice as Bodhisattva practice. Bodhisattva is dedicated to universal liberation. The Lotus Sutra says in chapter 2 on skillful means, one of the various parts of it that Dogen talks about a lot, that the single great cause for Buddha's appearing in the world is to help suffering beings and help them into the path of awakening. That's the point of this practice. That's why Buddhas appear. So there are many colorful stories and parables in the Lotus Sutra. One central story that I'm going to focus on, and actually the context of this for me is that this is material from a book I did, Visions of Awakening, Space and Time, Dogen and the Lotus Sutra, and I've been asked to do a couple of FIDE seminar on this for European Soto teachers in France in November. So this, I've been thinking about this again and working on this, and I'm also giving a class, my annual seminary graduate school class in the spring on the Lotus Sutra and Zen aspects of that. There's the central story in the middle of the sutra that has always been felt really important to me, and I've been talking about in the first half of the sutra. Shakyamuni Buddha, the historical Buddha who lived in Northeast Asia 2,500 years ago, more or less, is asking his great assembly of disciples and bodhisattvas, and including bodhisattvas who've come from different world systems, which I don't know if that means they came from, in our terms, from different solar systems or galaxies or different string theory dimensions, whatever. Anyway, so he keeps saying, who will come back in the distant future evil age and keep this teaching alive? And the Lotus Sutra is one of the couple of sutras that he gave right at the end of his life. So he keeps asking this, and finally a group of bodhisattvas who've come from one of these different distant world systems or solar systems or whatever say, okay, we'll come back in the future evil age and this teaching. And when I first read this, I kind of identified with this distant future evil age and with our time of climate damage and nuclear waste and nuclear bombs and injustice and mass incarceration and racism and all of the problems we have in our society, inequality. But historically, it turns out that throughout history, people devoted to the Lotus Sutra have always identified themselves as being in the future evil age. Uh-huh. Nichiren Ren, who was a contemporary of Dogen and founded a major branch of Japanese Buddhism, saw himself as connected to this. Anyway, at some point, these bodhisattvas offer to come back, and the Buddha says, no, actually, you don't need to do that. Don't worry about it. And then suddenly, the earth splits open, and from the open space under the ground, thousands and millions of ancient wise bodhisattvas spring forth from the earth. So I love that image, you know, that from the space under our seats, from the earth itself, there are these bodhisattvas who can come forth in time of need and help bring sanity and kindness to the world. And that leads to another, that story leads to another part that's kind of the key to the Lotus Sutra, that the regular disciples of the Buddha, the historical ones and other bodhisattvas say, who are those guys? Where did they come from? We never heard, saw them before. Who taught them? And Buddha says, oh, I'm their teacher. And they say, wait a second, you know, we know these guys, these people from under the ground are ancient, obviously venerable, wise, kind bodhisattvas, and we know that it's only 40 years since he left the palace and got enlightened, 40, 45 years, and now, you know, your life is coming towards an end, and how could you be their teacher? And then the Buddha reveals, key revelation of the Lotus Sutra, that actually, since the time he became a Buddha, and before that when he was doing bodhisattva practice, it's been a very, very, very long time, many, many ages, maybe several big bangs ago. And he will continue into the future twice that long. So, okay, so that's the story. I've been telling the story the last couple of days or so. But what I want to talk about is how Dogen uses that story to talk about our practice. So this idea of this inconceivable lifespan, Dogen talks about in terms of time, and there's a famous writing by Dogen called Being Time, the Ruji, where he talks about time moving in multiple dimensions and the fullness of time right now, and this has to do with our presence as we sit period after period. So some of us have been sitting here for 3 days. As we take the next inhale and exhale, as we get up and do walk and meditation, this is not these vast ages of the future and past are part of this time. And Dogen uses this story and other things to talk about the quality of our experience as we sit, as we're present, as we're upright, as we take another breath, and then as that gets expressed in our everyday activity, as we go out from formal meditation into our everyday life. So, okay, I want to just tell you about some ways in which Dogen talks about this. So there's one of his essays in the Shobo Genzo, one of his two long works, that I've talked about actually quite a bit before. It's called The Awesome Presence of Active Buddhas, or Gyobutsu Iki. And he's talking about the quality of awakening and its endurance through time. So he says that, know that Buddhas in the Buddha way do not wait for awakening. Active Buddhas simply fully experience the vital process on the path of going beyond Buddha. So Buddha remaining in the world does not wait passively for some future experience of Buddhahood. So I talked about this yesterday too, in terms of Dogen talking about our practice being about enactment, about actually expressing Buddha. We don't sit zazen for something, for the sake of something else that's going to happen in the future. We don't practice for something else. It's just this next breath or this breath. So Buddhas in the world don't wait passively for some future experience of Buddhahood, but engage in awakening as an active process. This Buddha going beyond Buddha is an expression that Dogen uses very often to describe the vitality of ongoing awakening. So we don't look back at some past experience or understanding. We don't look forward to some other understanding or dramatic experience that maybe we think might happen in the future if we sit long enough or go to enough sessions or whatever. It's about right here and now, this morning. So, right after this Dzogchen getting close, Shakyamuni Buddha, in chapter 16, we'll for our midday chant, we've been chanting a part of that chapter, but the Buddha said, in the past I practiced the Bodhisattva way, and so have attained this long lifespan, still now unexhausted, covering vast numbers of years. And Dzogchen says about this, you should know that it is not that the lifespan of the Bodhisattva has continued without end only until now, and it's not that the lifespan of the Buddha has prevailed only in the past, but what is called vast numbers, in terms of vast numbers of years, is a total inclusive attainment. What is called still now is the total lifespan. Even if in the past I practiced, which the Buddha said is one solid piece of iron 10,000 miles long, it hurls away hundreds of years vertically and horizontally. This being so, practice realization we are sitting in the middle of, each of us, is neither existence nor beyond existence. Practice realization is not defined. There may be hundreds, thousands, and myriad of practice realizations in a place where there is no Buddha and no person. Practice realization does not defile active Buddhas. So Dzogchen is using the story of the long lifespan of the Buddha to support what he often expresses, that this practice realization is imminent, it's here, and it's a kind of pure unity. So I want to talk about that too. The inconceivable lifespan becomes a symbol for Dzogchen of our ongoing present being time. This time that's not some... So time is not just some external container, like, you know, the time on my watch. Time is actually our presence, our activity, our thinking and deeds right now. We are being time. Time is how we see our activity and awareness. It's not an abstract time frame belonging to some esoteric realm of Buddhas, but a way of explaining Dzogchen's view of time as the actuality of non-dual awakening and active practice in this concrete present context. So this vast lifespan is right now. And then he also says, so there's a lot of interesting things in that essay. It's long, and I've talked about it other times too, and will again. But he says, what is attentively maintained by active Buddhas who are actually practicing, and is thoroughly mastered by active Buddhas, is like this. And then he says this thing, although the everyday activities of active Buddhas invariably allow Buddhas to practice. So we've talked a little bit about the forms of the Zendo and the Sesshin and the Zafus and the new Zafu cabinet and the floorboards and the candle and the incense and the bowls we take our meals in at lunchtime. All of it allow us to practice. All of the everyday activities allow us to practice. But also, he says, active Buddhas allow everyday activities to practice. So this is not how we usually think about our experience. This is to abandon your body for Dharma, to abandon Dharma for your body. This is to give up holding back your life and to hold on fully to your life. So to actually allow our everyday activities to be practicing, to allow the bowls and utensils as we're eating lunch to practice. They are practicing with us. When we are doing walking meditation and we take another step in faith and trust that the floor will meet our foot, we are allowing the floor to practice. It's a really strange way of thinking in terms of our usual ideas of reality. But anyway, this is what Dzogchen says. So for Dzogchen, the enduring life of Shakyamuni is realized by those who fully give their vitality to everyday activities of Buddhist practice. So in the forms of the Zendo, and then, you know, in subtle ways that we don't, often we don't realize, in how we are in the world with the people in our lives when we go out from our sitting space. And this is not, you know, he talks about this, you know, in time and space as vast, as beyond, as going beyond. He says that which allows one corner of a Buddha's awesome presence is the entire universe, the entire earth, as well as the entirety of birth and death, coming and going, of innumerable lands and innumerable lotus blossoms growing out of the muck and mud of our minds. So it says a lot of interesting things about this. I won't get to all of them, but one of the things that Dogen says is, know that it is equally difficult to listen to and accept this sutra. Expounding and listening are not a matter of superior or inferior. All Buddhas of the three times remain and listen to the Dharma. So that's a kind of reference to something in that chapter in the sutra. As the fruit of Buddhahood is already present, they do not listen to Dharma to achieve Buddhahood in the future, but are already Buddhas. So Buddhas who are listening to the Dharma also do not wait for awakening. So, you know, I'm sitting up here giving this talk, but you're also giving this talk. Buddhas sit and listen to the Dharma, and they also speak the Dharma. It's not that if you listen to this, to my talk or some other talk or read something, that you will get some understanding and then later on you will become a Buddha. No. It's not our practice. So all of you, each in your own way, as an enactment of this Buddha mind that we connect with in Zazen, is listening to the Dharma now, the way Buddhas do. So he quotes the sixth ancestor, Guinyin, who said, the essential point of the sutra concerns the causes and conditions for Buddhas appearing in the world. This is goes back to the saying from the Lotus Sutra, for the sake of suffering beings. And that may include the suffering beings on your cushion or chair right now. You know, it's not separate. We practice facing the wall in our own seat, allowing everything to arise, remorse, regret, fear, confusion, greed or craving, all this human stuff arises and we face it. And these are the causes and conditions for Buddhas appearing in the world. This is the mud that the lotus grows out of. So Dogen uses these stories and this teaching from the Lotus Sutra in various ways to encourage us to practice. So in our tradition particularly, we do Zazen, we do forms of the temple, and we also study. And some be more than others, and that's fine. I mean, the most important thing is Zazen, because it's out of Zazen that this awareness, this creative expression somehow grows. But we also, you know, listen to these stories of the ancient masters, and we read these sutras from the Bodhisattva tradition and all of the Buddhist tradition. And we read Dogen and other great ancient masters, and we chant sometimes some of these, as we will, midday to day. The point of all that is not to read something to learn so we'll have some understanding in the future. So, like Zazen, study is radically different than our usual sense of learning or knowledge or study. Dogen uses the Japanese word gaku, which means to study, like kids study in school. But he's talking about that in terms of the study we do in zazen, as we sit, as we take the next breath and study the self, as he says, see the stuff that comes up. And we also, you know, hear about sutras and teaching stories as ways to encourage our practice. So, you know, I don't care if you, you know, learn about the Lotus Sutra. You know, we're not studying this as some historical artifact, and the same with the koans and all the teaching stories. This is about you, your practice, each of us. So how do we use this? And this, so Dogen is giving an example of this in the way he talks about the Lotus Sutra, but also when we study Dogen, who's, you know, very difficult to understand in terms of our usual linear way of thinking, but that's not the point. It's like probably many of you have read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, or some of you have, by Suzuki Roshi, my teacher's teacher. That's a wonderful book that you can keep going back to again and again and again. We have a Thursday night discussion group talking about some of it. People who first read that and have never practiced or sat zazen, sometimes anyway, say, what is this? It just seems like really obtuse and, you know, opaque and whatever. But when you're sitting, when you have a regular practice of just sitting down, facing the wall, facing yourself, taking another breath, somehow then reading Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, it comes alive, and it's and you have some feeling about what it's about. So this is how Dogen is using this material, these stories from the Lotus Sutra. And, you know, this is a, Zen is a tradition of stories, storytelling, of using these stories not to get some understanding so that in the future we'll have some understanding, but as expressions, enactments, to show us and help us enjoy our own enactment and expression of this teaching right now. So there's another one of Dogen's essays is called Nyorai Zenshin. The Tathagata's whole body, Tathagata is just another word for Buddha, that means the one who comes and goes in suchness, as such. And he talks about the Lotus Sutra a lot in that essay. And he says, the sutra is the whole body of the Tathagata. The mark of reality of all things is this present time. The mark of reality of all things in the present time is the sutra. So the sutra and the whole of reality itself, Dogen relates to this long-lived Shakyamuni Buddha, whose lifespan resulting from the merits of original bodhisattva practices is not limited in size by even such things as the size of the universe, Dogen says. It transcends this limit. It is limitless. This is the whole body of the Buddha, and it is the sutra. So, I'm just going to read little bits from Dogen. Dogen says, and I'll say even now, the Buddhist practice continues through his current followers. That includes all of you. Just by being here, you are children of Buddha. You are part of the Buddha family. And, you know, Dogen tries to encourage us, because sometimes we need encouragement. You know? This practice is totally simple. You know, just sit down and face the wall and keep breathing. But it's also, you know, it's difficult to sustain awareness and attention and uprightness. So we need some encouragement, and that's what these teachings are for. He says, the long eons of difficult and painful practices are the activity of the womb of Buddha. So this gets into another kind of background teaching to Tathagata Bhava. This womb of Buddhas, which And I talked on Friday about the Buddhas create a space when they become awakened. They create a Buddha land. So we're living in Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddha land. For the last 2,500 years. But this rule of Buddha is this idea of the space that the Buddha has created is a womb for embryos of Buddha, Buddha embryos like us, to arise and grow, and like the lotus growing out of him like the butterflies. And also, each of us is a womb of Buddhas in that we can support others to be Buddha, which we're doing just by being here right now, and support the land to be awakened. So this gets to the aspect of our practice that's also taking care of the land and our world and our society and our environment. Anyway, so Dogen says, when it is said that these practices have not ceased even for a second, it means that even though Buddha is perfectly enlightened, he still practices vigorously, and he continues forever, even though he converts the whole universe. This activity is the whole body of the Buddha. So there's this idea of... well, first of all, there's just the reality that Buddha continued to practice. When he became the Buddha, when he had his great awakening under the Bodhi tree, that wasn't the end of his practice. That wasn't the end of his awakening. So this idea of Buddha going beyond Buddha, Buddha continued to sit every day. Buddha continued to awaken. And our practice is ongoing. It's not about, you know, we don't sit for the sake of some fancy experience or understanding we might have in the future. That's an illusion. We are expressing and enacting it right now in our postures, in our awareness, in our efforts at kindness and insight. So for Dogen, the significance of this enduring Shakyamuni is not merely that Buddha is present in the world, but that his vigorous, inspiring practice continues and converts the whole universe. So all of this is a kind of description of reality from the point of view of Zazen and Dogen and Buddha and the Lotus Sutra and all of that. But it's also a prescription. We have a responsibility as followers of Buddha and as students of the Buddha way and as followers of Dogen and Hiroshi and so forth. We have a responsibility to take care of this. This is not some passive thing happening out there. Each of us, in our practice, allows Buddha's lifespan to continue. So this is why it's important. It's not enough to just, you know, this isn't just a self-help practice. It's not enough to just have some understanding of Buddhist psychology. And there's all these wonderful teachings and so forth. And you know, it's okay to understand them, and it's possible, actually. But the point is, how do we express this in our Zazen, in our lives, in our everyday activity? So another... This gets to the precepts and ethics and our responsibility as children of Buddha to keep Buddha alive. It's not just that Buddha's off somewhere on some mountaintop, still having this long lifespan. It's right here. So another one of Dogen's essays, Awakening the Bodhi Mind, he discusses this bodhicitta, which has come up in this weekend, this first thought of awakening. What is it that first inspires us to care about the quality of our life? To care about the quality of the world? And again, it's not just about taking care of our life or the life of our fellow sangha. How do we take care of all the... How do we respond? It's not that we can fix all of the political corruption and the media and politics and the economy that's dedicated to billionaires now. How do we respond and be helpful in our world? This is also part of our responsibility. So this bodhicitta, you know, is mysterious. Where does this come from? In some sense, just that first thought of awakening is considered to be equivalent to all of Buddha's enlightenment. And yet, of course, it unfolds just like lotus blossoms unfold. It develops, you know. So Buddha is not static, Buddha is alive. We are not static, dead objects sitting on, even though sometimes when we sit still and on our cushions and chairs, it might look like we're a bunch of tree stumps. Actually, we're alive. We're alive. How do we give life to this life? And so Dogen quotes the Buddha's statement at the end of chapter 16 on the lifespan that we will be chanting later. I have always given thought to how I could cause all creatures to enter the highest supreme way and quickly become Buddhas. And Dogen says that this statement is the Buddha's lifetime itself. Buddha's establishment of the mind, training, and experience of the effect of all his practice are like this. This lifespan is exactly the intention to help all beings awaken. And this mysteriously creates the ongoing life of the Buddha. Another one of Dogen's essays is called Kenbutsu, means seeing Buddha or meeting Buddha. And again, he refers to this long lifespan and appearing to be born, awaken, and pass away as merely a skillful means, as we'll chant about later. And Dogen says that when beings with unified or undivided mind desire to meet Buddha without attachment to their own body and life, at that time, Buddha appears at the assembly of Vulture Peak and expounds the Lotus Sutra. Dogen says, when each present individual secretly arouses the desire to meet Buddha, we are desiring to meet Buddha through the concentration of the Vulture Peak mind. So he talks about this undivided mind. How could the undivided body not appear together with this mind? So this is also kind of a Zazen instruction, this wholehearted, single-minded practice. Now, how do we meet and express this undivided mind? So this is a primary question for our practice, for our Zazen, and you know, all of our practice, bowing or chanting or serving lunch or eating lunch. What is this undivided mind and undivided body? Because they're not separate. How do we just give ourselves to being fully present? And there's a phrase that Dogen uses, Sokushin Butsu, this very mind is Buddha. But it's this presence. Now, this doesn't mean that if you're, you know, all of you have experienced when you sit zazen, you know, thoughts happen. Maybe not all the time, but often there's this chatter going on. That's there. That's part of your body. Our stomach continues to secrete digestive juices. Our brain continues to secrete thoughts. We don't have to, you know, don't believe everything you think. So there's all this, you know, mental stuff and chatter and sensations going on. That's fine. That doesn't interfere with what he's talking about here, this undivided mind. Being fully present. Part of that is just to sit like Buddha. Whether we're sitting cross-legged or kneeling or sitting in a chair, to just be present and upright. And enjoy our breathing and be present is the undivided mind. But we have to give ourselves to that. We have to actually perform that. Zazen is kind of a performance art. how do we actually do this? So, again, this isn't about obtaining some future acquisition of awakening or understanding, but the practice of enlightenment is already present in the continuing presence of living Buddha. This practice of establishment of awakening in this very body and mind is kind of like a description of the enduring Shakyamuni as reality itself. So this idea of Buddha nature that under this kind of underground, you know, these underground bodhisattvas ready to spring forth. Our practice is to kind of perform or enact. We do it through rituals sometimes, through the ritual of zazen, through the ritual of bowing or chanting. But this is a performance or enactment of this underlying reality that those bodhisattvas down there are hanging out, ready to, you know, share with us if we forget. And it has to do with a kind of active faith in this awakened reality as already and continually being expressed and present in the conditioned world. So we hear that this is the nature of this, of the reality of our world, and yet it's not enough to just hear that, like some information about something that's happening, you know, down in the loop or something. It's actually right here. And we have, it's up to us. And, you know, sometimes, some periods of zazen, you might feel sleepy or groggy. Sometimes you might, your mind might be very active, or you might be worrying about or thinking about some situation or something. Still, just to be present and express Buddha's body mind is this undivided self. So Dogen also says in Dawa, when one person just sits and displays Buddha Mudra with their whole body and mind, all of space awakens. And he talks about earth, and grasses, and trees, and even tiles and pebbles and fences and walls being part of this awakening field. This is like this Buddha field. So this is not how we usually think about reality or our practice. You know, people come to do meditation as some technique to, you know, to become more mindful or more calm. But this underlying reality is what Dogen is pointing to and what zazen is about. So again, just know that Buddhas in the Buddha way do not wait for awakening. Active Buddhas just fully experience this vital process on the path of going beyond Buddha. And like Shakyamuni, even though he is now a Buddha, he still practices diligently. When it is said that these practices have not ceased even for a second, it means that even though Buddha is perfectly enlightened, he still practices vigorously, and he continues forever, even though he converts the whole universe. So this bodhisattva teaching is very deep underpinning of our Zen practice, of the zazen and all these Zen stories. It's just to encourage you to be present and express Buddha in whatever way you can. We each have our own way of being Buddha. I can't tell you how to be Buddha. This is something we discover for ourselves when we settle enough and have this rhythm of settling in our lives so that we can feel and hear these underground bodhisattvas arising in us. So I've been closing each day with another thing that Dogen says, which I think is lovely. He says, the family style of all Buddhas and ancestors is to first arouse the vow to save all living beings by removing suffering and providing joy. Only this family style is inexhaustibly bright and clear. So that's what we're doing here. You know, this tradition, this lineage, this family of Buddha is about removing suffering. So if, you know, like the Bodhisattva of Compassion, who's, who will also chant about in the midday, Kanzaion, we are determined to free all living beings and to remove suffering. So, as Bodhisattvas or Buddhas, whatever, you know, we have, it looks like these days we have plenty of job security. There's lots of suffering out there and in here and all around us. So how do we respond? And it's not that we're going to fix everything, but just to be aware. So I talk about these things here sometimes, about inequality and climate damage and injustice. Because that's part of the suffering that's also on each of our own seats. So he says that the family style is to, our family style is to first arouse the vow to save all living beings by removing suffering and providing joy. So when we actually are willing to take on just being present without our understanding it, or, you know, even feeling, you know, we still might be caught up in all of our, I don't know, confusion or concerns or our own personal patterns of habits of grasping and craving and fear and frustration and anger. That stuff, that's part of our humanity. That's where this comes from. But even so, when we can be present and upright in the middle of that, we don't, when we are willing to not try and run away from ourselves and from reality, it's tremendous joy and power in that. It's wonderful that we can do this. Each of us in this room has various problems. And, you know, it's okay if that's the case. But to be able to be present and upright in the middle of that, it's wonderful. It's joyful even. How do we share this joy? He also says, Bodhisattvas studying the way should know how Buddha nature produces the conditions for Buddha nature. So, the point of Buddhas or Bodhisattvas appearing in the world is simply just to help others enter into the path of helping others, to enter into the path of helping others, to awaken. So congratulations on being Buddhas, listening to the teaching of Buddhas. So for those of us who will be here for the whole day, we will have in the afternoon, as we've been doing, tea and a chance for discussion. But for people who joined us this morning, I do want to take a little time. If you have comments, any of you, if you have comments or questions or responses about any of this or anything else, please feel free. Really difficult or strange to think that Buddha is right here, right under your cushion of chair. How do we make it so? Is your hand up there?
I'm just thinking, on the way here this morning, happened to hear something on the radio. There's a discussion on the Jewish tradition of teshuvah, and explain that how it looks in the high holidays, which are Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Happening now, yeah.
Which is happening on the days of Awe, they call it. And what struck me was a similarity to Buddhism, and how it talks about that teshuvah really means to stop and turn. And so it's now the chance to stop and turn and go a different direction.
Yes.
And Teshuva in modern Hebrew means to respond. And that's how it's used in modern Hebrew. And the whole concept of actually Teshuva was created by this rabbi's tradition. Teshuva was created before the world was created.
Yeah.
Because once time is there, you can't go back and change. So it had to be this concept of returning had to exist before the world existed. In causality. Is that right? Causality. Okay. It came about. And it was just interesting because I was thinking about it and lots of different things came to my mind. And the great sense of joy I felt hearing this, to be present and in that. It's similar to what we talked about yesterday about that when I take refuge, it's not really taking refuge in that Buddha's my savior or something, but that I'm returning back to my original essence.
So I have like several responses already to things you've said, so let me respond. Just the thing about before the world started. That's one difference, I think, between Buddhism and the Abrahamic religions, because in terms of this, you know, and these are all just stories, right? Who knows? I mean, maybe Stephen Hawking is. I don't know. But in some sense, there's no creator deity in Buddhism. There's no... It's beginningless, it's endless, it's vast in space and time. So these are just stories. But just to say that, and yet we also talk about the empty kalpa, that there are periods of time in this endlessness that Buddhism talks about where there's nothing, nothing's happening. So that's, you know, so maybe there's in between big bangs, there's anyway, whatever. That's just a little footnote, but the main thing I wanted to say that thing of responding is really important, and I think it's at the heart of the Bodhisattva practice too. And there's another Hebrew word, tikkun olam, to heal the world. And I think that Bodhisattva precepts and responsibilities about that, not that we can fix everything, but that, you know, our awakening is about moving in that direction. Dogen says to remove suffering and provide joy. Another way to see that is, how do we heal? How do we help to heal? How do we move towards healing of all of the sadness, suffering, and so forth in the world? So thank you for that, David.
The thing for me, what I was struck by was the amount, the joy that came up from that. And so you were talking before that in this awareness of all that is, the joyfulness that comes up.
Yeah, and part of what's joyful, what brings me back to Zazen, is that we can connect to this sense of wholeness. That it's okay to be the person on your seat right now. That it's okay to whatever's happening, that there's some way in which the ultimate, the universal totality, whatever word you want to use, is this background Buddha nature. So that joy is important, that we can enjoy our practice and our ability to be present and upright and express Buddha in the middle of it all. So thank you, David. Anybody else? Any other questions, comments, responses? Hi, Brian. Welcome back.
I'm reminded in this discussion of time and all of the amount of time that sort of opens up into the kind of eternal time, that these ancient Greek words for time, two different ways of looking at it, chronos and kairos. And chronos is the chronological sense of time that we normally live with. I'm here now for a little while, I'm going to be going doing this, and later on I'll do that, and yeah. You know, it's all marching along. And then kairos is really without past or future. It's what we sometimes describe as time stood still. And what is that experience when time stands still? What is it that opens up? And I often thought about how unpredictable that is and how I can't just say, well, okay, now I'm going to slip out of Kronos into Kairos. I'll do that now. But I think we can maybe prepare the conditions where that might happen. It always seems like a surprise when it does. But
yeah, I appreciate that perspective. Thank you. You know, that Dogen and Buddhism about time is that's a whole other, you know, huge topic and a whole other session. Or maybe I'll get to that next year somehow. But just one thing I want to say, that part of the idea of Dogen's idea of time is the in the fullness of this present, which in a way is what you're talking about of Kairos, that all time is right here, but also from the point of view of response, and I'm referring to teachings from Joanna Macy, one of my teachers, that the point is to re-inhabit time, not to escape from time, not to try and run away from the Kronos or the full presence, but to actually take responsibility for past, future, and present in the present. So that's a whole other discussion, but yeah, it's an important and useful discussion. How we, and Dogen says in Being Time that we should actually study and think about and look at time and how we think of time. And, you know, we usually think of wasting time or spending time or various other transactions with time, but Bahan out front says, life and death is the great matter. Don't waste time. So how do we enjoy this time? So thank you for that, Brian. Maybe time for one more comment or question or response. Anybody? Hey,
does anyone know the exact translation of Tikkun?
Tikkun Olam.
Tikkun Olam.
I think it's something like healing the world.
But there's something underneath it. Healing is the implication of it, but I thought it was referencing something about, I think, the idea like of scattering, like that something has shattered and it's all throughout the world, and that the call is for us to, yes, find all the pieces and weave them, bring them together again.
Yeah. Dale, do you know about that?
It's about wholeness.
It rings a bell. I've heard it discussed that way.
Yeah. Yeah,
that there's this, the world is a part of turning the world back together.
Benjamin plays off of that in his essay on the angel of history. There's that notion of the world being shattered and the desire to find a way to bring it back.
So, yeah, and like there's an image that was given for me about it in someone's writings about it, about like weaving it together.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, and so it's this kind of organic image of these different, you know, all this multiplicity and then being like brought together. I don't know. So that there's darkness and light and there's separation and it's about integration and wholeness. So anyway, for me that's evocative just as a sort of getting into the particulars of what are we saying when we're talking about healing or what the world, or what are we talking about when we're saying we're here for all to support all the bodhisattvas to, you know, awaken to their true nature, or, you know, not just ourselves, like that. I think there's a basic usefulness for me of being reminded that my practice is not just about myself, because I can get into a more self-absorbed, you know, obviously just most of the time I'm self-absorbed. So it's just a reminder. Oh yeah. But then, but then I think what I've come up against is often that tension of, well, you know, really there's the self-absorbed tendency is sort of constant. And then I notice, oh right, you know, at least in the abstract, often my response to others is feeling competitive or worried that they're going to not like me, or, you know, they'll surpass me and I'll feel bad about myself, whatever this different, you know, that, so I feel like, so then it's like, So to me, part of what it means to enact the practice is that you're talking about is just allowing myself to notice all those tendencies and barriers to being present with others. That I think, it's easier for me when I'm actually interacting with others, then I naturally feel more compassionate, unless they trigger me in some way and then I feel defended. But it, which that's something to notice too. But I think it's in the abstract often, all these other tendencies arise. So anyway, it's just, for me, that's helpful, is just to think about the practice as a way of being with all that complexity and being really open to it. And I don't know where the Tikkun Olam thing fits in, but somehow it feels something about being with that complexity too, of the shattered, broken world, and truly being with that, and through that being with it, a way to weave it together arises, but not just from kind of like going out in ignorance to like help.
Right. Yeah, so I've heard Tikkun Olam translated, I think, as mending the world.
Hmm.
Mending in the sense of like mending your clothes or stitching things together. So the sense of, thank you for adding that, because I think the healing the world or mending the world has to do with what Dogen's talking about here in terms of undivided mind, undivided body, that we're bringing, everything is fragmented. And when we sit, we're bringing it all together, bringing it all back home. Somehow connecting things is part of the activity of mending and healing the suffering of the world. So, thank you very much for that.